Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name's MJ.
And I'm Liz.
And we're your host of
Sisters in Crime.
Hey guys, we're back with a brand new episode, and this week we are covering a case that Liz has actually been requesting since season one. Today we'll be talking about the mysterious death of Tamla Horsford. Was her death really an accident? Let's get started. Although there is very little public information about Tamla prior to her death, Tamla was born in 1978 in St. Vincent, which is a Caribbean island off the coast of Venezuela. At the age of 11, her family decided that it was best for them to relocate to the Bronx, New York. At some point later in her life, Tamla met her husband Leander Horsford in Florida, and after the birth of their 5 sons, the couple decided to relocate to Cumming City, Georgia. It was here where she enrolled her 5 sons into a football league, allowing her to quickly make friends with all the other moms. In this newfound group of friends, Tamla met John Myers. John decided that for her upcoming birthday party, instead of all of them going out, that they should all come over for a slumber party, but that they were welcome to spend the night so they wouldn't have to drink and drive. The date was set, and on November 3rd, 2018, Tamla fed her sons and husband dinner, packed a small overnight bag, grabbed a bottle of tequila, and headed to John's house. It's unclear what time she actually arrived. Some sources say 8:30, others say 10:30, but regardless, she arrives. In the home, there was a total of 12 people, 9 women, including Tamla and John, and 3 men, Jose Barrera, John's boyfriend at the time, Tom Smith, the husband of one of the 9 women, and another unnamed man who was only at the party at drop-off and pickup. During this sleepover, the women were upstairs and the men were in the basement. When I say upstairs, I mean like the first floor. All the women were sitting around drinking alcohol, gossiping, and just catching up, having a great time. There's very grainy clips of this on YouTube, and I'll link them in the show notes for all you to see, but they're just very, very bad, so keep that in mind. Anyways, at some point in the night, both Jose, Jean's boyfriend, and Tom made their way upstairs and decided to join the women. This is when they began playing cards against humanity while continuing to drink. Tamla was the only person in the group who was an avid smoker, so she would often get up to have a smoke on her own and then later would rejoin the group. At some point, Tamla had decided to smoke weed, which Jean was not a fan of. She politely asked Tamla to stop out of respect for her home, but also because Jose, her boyfriend, was a court officer and would most likely be against the use of any recreational drugs. Regardless, Tamla continued taking her regular smoke breaks throughout the night. Guests began dropping throughout the night. Some left, some decided to head to bed, and by 1:30 a.m., Jean and Jose were going to bed too. They said goodnight to Tamla, who was still in the kitchen, and noted that she was heading out for another smoke break, and that's the last that they saw of her. 17 minutes later, Bridget Fuller, who was one of the guests,
and the last person to see Tamla alive,
was on her way out of the door to head home. She saw Tamla having a late night snack,
aka gumbo.
And they spoke a little bit, they spoke briefly. Tamla told her that she'd be headed out for a smoke break. They said goodnight to each other, and Bridget headed out the front door. Like Liz said, she would be the last person to have seen Tamla alive. Fast forward to the following morning, it is now Sunday, November 4th. Madeline, who was the aunt of John and was living in the basement at the time, woke up and through her window she could see something odd laying in the backyard. As she got closer, she noticed that it looked like clothes. Specifically, it looked like the PJ set Tamla had been wearing the night before.
Tamla actually had a very cute, it was kind of like a jumpsuit, I think. It was white, and I think from what I recall, I might be mistaking, but it was, I remember seeing it as like a jumpsuit, and it had like doggy print or doggy paw, like gray doggy paws, something like that.
Something with a dog.
Yes.
So it was really cute for sure, and you know, very noticeable. So when Madeline saw it on the floor, she recognized it as Tamla's. And just before we continue, let me kind of explain the layout of this home. John's home was a two-floor house with a basement, but the house was on a downhill slope. So from the street view, you could only see the two floors, but when you were heading to the backyard, you could actually exit the house from the basement. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, and we'll post a picture of what this looks like just in case it doesn't make sense. But yes, you could exit the house through the basement. That's why Madeline could also see the backyard and the PJ set from her window. But anyways, Madeline sees this, goes outside, and realizes that it is Tamla on the floor. Madeline runs inside, heads up two flights of stairs, bursts into John's room, and tells her that Tamla is laying in the backyard unconscious. John and Jose, who had spent the night, rush into the backyard to find Tamla just like Madeline described. Jose moved Tamla to check for a pulse, and when there was none, they called 911 at 8:59 a.m.
Hi, yes, I need an ambulance and a police to my home.
What's the address?
4450 Woodlake Court.
4450 Woodlake?
Woodlake,
okay. All right, 4450 Woodlake Court. What is your name?
My name is John Myers, J-E-A-N-N-E.
Okay, and your phone number is 609.
The call cuts out here, guys.
Yes.
Okay, what's going on?
We had people over last night when we were drinking. Most of us went to bed. One of them stayed on the balcony. She was drinking, and we just went outside, and she's laying face down in the backyard. It looks like me. I'm guessing maybe she fell off the balcony, but she's stiff.
Okay, is she breathing?
I don't know if she's face down.
Okay, how old is she?
I'm 41. Here, hold on.
Hey, this is Jose Pereira.
It's weird that, you know, first John started talking. And then I guess she just didn't know what to say, or, you know, she didn't want to mess up if they had a little plan. No, not pointing fingers yet, people. But she just quickly handed the phone over, like,
to Jose.
To Jose, who probably has a lot of experience if he works in...
He's a court officer.
If he's a court officer, then he probably has very good communicating skills when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Hey, have y'all checked to see if she's breathing?
She's not moving one bit. She's not breathing. I just tried to assess her Tesla. She's completely face down in the yard. She is stiff.
Okay. How far is the, where she would have fell from? How far is the deck from the ground?
I would probably say... maybe 20 feet.
Okay.
You know, 20 feet from where your feet would be on the railing. The railing itself is maybe 3.5-4 feet.
Okay. Was she there with anyone else?
I don't believe anybody was. My girlfriend has cameras here on the back deck that we can check.
Okay.
That I think would have caught the incident if she fell from here.
The dispatcher didn't even ask for any information about, like, cameras, and he was so quick to say, hey, there's cameras in the balcony.
True, I don't know. It's hard to say if she fell from the deck or if she was already downstairs. She was the only smoker here, and I'm sorry.
So you think she's probably smoking?
Yeah, she was the only smoker. I mean, I'm on the back deck right now, and, you know, cigarette lighter, that type of thing, out here.
Yes, I have one deputy that's about to pull into your subdivision. Do you see him outside?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
I thought it was interesting you mentioned this, that Jean was on the phone. She was literally on the phone 1 minute, guys. And I'm going to link the 911 call because I'm probably going to edit this down because I don't think you guys want to sit here and listen to an 8-minute phone call. So I'm going to include chunks of the call. But if you want to listen to the entire thing all the way through, I definitely recommend that you do. And I'm going to link that down below. But it was odd to me that Jean was on the call for only 1 minute, like literally a minute and a couple of seconds. And during that time, she tells the dispatcher very, very calmly, might I add, hey, my name's this. I just found my friend dead on the floor. She had been drinking. She had been smoking. She must have fallen off the balcony. This is my address. And then she hands the phone to Jose. And I'm like,
very calmly. Yes. And like she, like
very precise, she's organized.
To me, it sounded like she had practiced what she was gonna say before she even made the call.
Yeah. And
like they went over a little plan before. Yes. she even called.
I've called 911 before, guys, when I witnessed a car crash happening. And I was freaking out. And this was a car crash that had nothing to do with me. It didn't involve me. But I saw it happen live action. And I was freaking out. I called 911. And I'm like yelling on the phone. So for them to have found their friend on the floor of their backyard, potentially dead, and to talk on the phone like you're just talking to your homegirl, like that is ridiculous.
I agree with you, sister. I've also called 911 myself, and I'm on the phone, and I just want to hang up. I want to, like, I don't want to keep wasting time talking on the phone when I can be, like, helping, like,
what's to do?
Yes,
what's next? You
know, yes, exactly.
And I don't know if the dispatcher kept Jose on the call, like, if this was her doing, or if, and honestly, it kind of sounds like Jose is just word vomiting at this point, like, just trying to figure out what to say. Like, he's like, and yeah, we were drinking. I don't really know her name. I've just met her. Yeah, she was drinking. Like he's just trying to figure out what to say, and it's just very not well thought out. But the important information, like what Jean said in the beginning of the call, was thought out.
Also, in the call, you can hear background noise.
Conversations.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, and people are having, like, casual conversations in the back. You don't hear no screaming, no possibly crying, no, like, desperation from people's voices or anything. That's just not the way you act. If you have the right state of mind, that's just not how you act around a crime scene, or not even a crime scene, but around something
dead,
like that.
Yeah. A potential death.
A potential death, yes.
Exactly.
And now a word from today's sponsor.
Before the break, we heard the 911 call made by Jane and Jose. Police arrived on the scene 7 to 8 minutes from when the call was originally placed. As we know, Jose and the dispatcher were on the phone up until the police arrived. So this was an 8-minute phone call. On arrival, investigators immediately began pushing the accidental fall notion.
Do you think this was because John and Jose both mentioned that during the call?
Honestly, yes. Do you?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Tamla's body was taken to the medical examiner, and her autopsy was performed by the Forsyth, I think it's pronounced Forsyth, County Sheriff's Office. The autopsy found multiple blunt force injuries. Tamala also had a high alcohol blood level, and I couldn't find the actual number, but it was high.
From my research, sister, I found that it was 3 times more than the legal
amount
to drive
0.08,
was.
Yeah. Okay, so it was high. Based on these findings, the police department found no reason to believe that there was foul play involved, and went with the accidental fall off the balcony theory.
Did they go over the balcony footage?
Yeah, because Jose mentioned cameras, right?
Yes.
So, thank you for bringing that up. Apparently, they did. But when they checked the cameras, guess what?
They didn't have anything.
The batteries were dead.
Of course. I mean, not surprised at all.
Yeah, and I mean, this could be realistic. But at the same time, like, what's the point of having cameras if you're going to let the battery die? Especially, like, at times like this.
I have cameras, people, and I always have a backup camera. But I know mine, it alerts me when it's low. And as soon as that happens, I either plug the new one in or make sure I charge the one I have. But I charge it while I'm at home, obviously.
My camera is solar powered, so I don't have to worry about changing any batteries. And I just figured, like I said, what's the point of having cameras if you're gonna let the battery die? Well, regardless, Tamla's family was not content with the conclusion that she had fallen off the balcony. The family decided to have a second autopsy performed by the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, aka the GBI.
Per their website, the GBI is, quote, an independent statewide agency that supports the state's criminal justice system in the areas of criminal investigations, forensic lab services, and computerized criminal justice information, end quote.
So basically, they aid in cases like this, but they're really there as a resource for small departments and counties who probably don't have the same investigative resources when compared to a big city like Atlanta.
Wait, so what city is this happening again?
Cumming, Georgia, or Cumming City, Georgia, which is a really small town with a population of just a little over 7,000 people. This is a predominantly white town, claiming 83% of the population, according to the 2020 census. Black or African Americans only make up 5.5% of the population, which is less than the 6% of the Asian population.
I don't know if you mentioned this already, but now that you brought this up, wasn't Tamala the only person of color at the slumber party?
I did forget to mention this, but yes, she was the only woman of color at this party. And knowing this, and also knowing that Cumming City was a hostile place for the Black and African American community, Tamla's family wasted no time suspecting a racially motivated accident. Because of this, they decided to contact the GBI to perform the second autopsy so that they could get an outsider's non-biased report. The GBI performed the autopsy, and this is what they found.
They found injuries to the neck, head, and torso,
which I think would be consistent with the fall off the balcony.
They also found four types of hemorrhages in her skull and brain,
which can happen with sudden and traumatic injuries to the head, which could be explained by a fall off the balcony.
She also had a dislocated wrist, not sure if it's left or right, and a laceration to her right ventricle.
See, these two injuries I cannot explain. The laceration, as we all know, like I said, right ventricle, that's part of your heart muscle. How did she injure that part of her heart muscle? I just feel like it wouldn't be easily hurt falling off the balcony. I just can't explain how she would get the laceration. And the laceration is like a tear in the muscle.
She also had plenty minor cuts to her face, leg, and wrist. Again, I don't think you get cuts all over your body from a fall like that. Unless you're like falling down from a hill in like a
rolling.
Yeah, exactly. Like rolling, then yes, which is not the case here.
I mean, I feel like these could be consistent with a fall too. Like, you know, you hit the, I don't know. I mean, I feel like they could be consistent.
Her alcohol level was at 0.238.
Which is, like you mentioned, 3 times the legal limit.
Also, they found THC, which is expected. John did say at some point in the night she did smoke weed. And lastly, Xanax.
I didn't see anywhere that she had a Xanax prescription, but we know that Xanax is often used recreationally anyways, so that could explain that.
So what do you think about this autopsy findings compared to the first one?
Well, we definitely have more information on this second autopsy compared to the first. Other than the wrist dislocation and the right ventricle damage, I think all the injuries could be consistent with a 14 to 15 foot fall.
Okay, I see why you say that.
Do you think it could be consistent, or do you think there's something else here so far with what we know?
I mean, as of right now, I'm taking a lot in, so I don't think I'm quite sure yet.
During the initial investigation, Jose Barrera, who was in attendance at the party, like I said, he was John's boyfriend, was actually fired from his job as a court officer for illegally accessing Tamla's incident report several times. When asked why he was doing so, he claimed that John had asked him to.
See? Already suspicious here, like from the beginning.
What is the point? What are you accessing the records for? What information do you need?
I guess like, hey, check and see what's going on. Like, are they pinpointing at us? Like, are we definitely
off the hook? Yes, are we gonna get arrested?
Yes, exactly. See, all suspicious written all over it. No.
Due to no other development in the case, and after interviewing over 30 individuals, on February 20th, 2019, the Forsyth County Sheriff's Department decided to close this case, ruling it an accidental death.
Also, just so you guys know, they interviewed the 30 people. They did something which I found very odd. The police brought everyone in the same room that was in at their house that night. Mm. I think that when you interrogate someone, you do it one by one.
Oh, they did it all together?
Yes. So I didn't see that. From my research, that's what I found, that like they brought in everyone that was at the house at that night and they put them all together in a room and they interrogate them all together at the same time, which I found very odd because like, why will you do that? Also, if by you doing that, you're helping like everyone stick to the same story, you know, and
yeah, because if you're maybe feeling like, you know, your conscience kind of getting to you and you kind of want to spill the beans, how are you going to do so when you're sitting there with the culprits and they're staring you down while you're being asked questions?
Also, you don't have no privacy. If you want to come forward and, you know, say, confess what actually did happen, everyone in that room will forever know it was you, instead of on the side, privately, maintain it anonymously, type of thing, you know?
Exactly. So fast forward to May of 2020, 2 years and 6 months after Tamla's death, her case regained the public's interest after the death of George Floyd. During this time, not only were we in the midst of a pandemic, but police brutality riots were at an all-time high. On June 5th, 2020, Ralph Fernandez, who was the family's attorney, wrote a letter to the husband, Leander, claiming that they were reinvestigating the case because they found further evidence that the body had been handled by the people on the scene before the police had arrived. Meaning that Jose had moved the body, or whoever had moved the body.
Okay, so now if this was an accident, why do you have the need and feel the need to move the body?
Well, I feel like if it was an accident, like we were discussing earlier, you want to check, oh my God, is my friend okay? Does she have a pulse? You know, I think this is justifiable, like that they moved her, if it was with good intentions, obviously.
Okay.
So not only was he claiming that they had handled the body before the police arrived, he was also claiming that the scene wasn't preserved. Again, highly contaminated scene. Their fingerprints are going to be everywhere, footprints everywhere. We're not going to really see or know how she was actually found prior to Madeline, Jean, and Jose arriving to the scene. On top of all of this, Tamla's body also showed evidence of physical struggle. As mentioned, Ralph wrote all of this in a letter and sent it to Leander, who had even more reason to want a reinvestigation into Tamla's death. Now, I don't know if this was before or after the letter was sent to Leander, but Ashlyn Harris had actually created a change.org petition for the reinvestigation into Tamla's death. As of right now, when we're recording this, this petition has over 700,000 signatures, and that is thanks to artists like T.I. and 50 Cent who shared this petition and asked their fans to show support and sign the petition. This petition helped convince the GBI to reconsider the known facts of the case. Unfortunately, as of July 2021, the GBI has decided to close this case once again without pursuing criminal charges. Thank you for listening to the Sisters in Crime podcast. You can find all pictures related to this case by visiting our Instagram at Sisters in Crime Pod or our Facebook page, Sisters in Crime Podcast. We'll be back next Wednesday with a brand new episode. Until then,
bye!